Expert HR Weekly, compliance, good practice and benchmarking for UK HR professionals.
Hello and welcome to Expert HR Weekly with me, Susan Dennehy. Managing long-term sickness absence can involve a number of practical considerations for employers. What if the employee informs you that he or she does not want to be contacted while they're on sickness absence? How do you avoid inadvertently discriminating against a disabled employee? What if the employee has gone on sickness absence after you've notified him or her that you intend to take disciplinary action against them? And what are the current rules on holiday and sickness? With me this week to discuss these issues and more is Employment Law Editor Fiona Cumming. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Sue.
So, Fiona, a question that employers often are unsure about is whether or not they can contact employees on long-term sickness absence. Can they contact them and how should they go about it?
Yes, you're right. They are often apprehensive about contacting employees because they're concerned it could be perceived as harassment. But the simple answer is that, yes, there should be regular contact maintained with an employee throughout. It's very good to manage the sickness absence process from the outset, and it's important because the contact allows the employer to be kept regularly updated on the employee's condition and providing assistance when and where necessary, and for the employee to be informed of any developments in the workplace. So although they're not at the workplace, they're still very much a part of it.
So would you say a pattern should be agreed at the outset?
Absolutely, and the pattern can depend on the particular circumstances. So it could be weekly or monthly, and again, the medium of contact as well.
And how should the employer contact the employee?
Well, they can really agree which way would work best for them. So it could be by text or email or Skyping or regular meetings, really. Again, on the individual circumstances.
And if the employee isn't in a position to be contacted, say they're in hospital or they're too ill to communicate with the employer, are there any special steps that an employer can take in that situation?
Well, again, being mindful here of issues of confidentiality, you probably should agree whether it could be a family member or a family friend that keeps them updated, just so they're kept in the loop.
And should the employer also take the opportunity to notify the employee about vacancies or promotion opportunities, considering they're on sickness absence?
Yes, it'd be certainly good practice for them to do that because, again, it's including the employee. And if that particular employee had a disability under the Equality Act, that would be deemed to be a reasonable adjustment in any event.
And if an employer offers a phased return to work after long-term sickness absence and it's going to be for a few weeks and the employee agrees to reduce their hours, does the employer also get to reduce their pay?
There's nothing stopping the employer from doing that. But again, there should be sort of openness and transparency about it. So when a phased return is first mentioned, the issue of any impact on pay should be discussed. And if possible, you know, a short written agreement to that effect. It's really so that there aren't any shocks and surprises for either party throughout the process.
As you say, putting in writing is probably a very important consideration, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And not all employees will be in the home country, as it were. Some employees will be abroad when they are taken ill. Is there anything the employer has to take into account if they're receiving certificates from a country abroad?
No, a certificate from a GP, well, any medical certificate from abroad, can be treated as good evidence of incapacity. The only issue would be, and indeed this will probably be the same domestically, if there was any concern that the certificate wasn't genuine, and in which case then you'd be investigating in the same way as you would if it was in the UK.
And about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a spate of cases on holiday and sickness absence and how you should treat holiday in those circumstances. Can you remind us what the current rules are on accruing annual leave?
Yes, hopefully I'll do this quite simply because, as you quite rightly say, there has been a lot of case law. So basically, the position at the moment is that employees on long-term sickness absence do accrue annual leave. They can choose to take their annual leave during the period of sickness absence if they want. Equally, they can choose not to, and if they decide not to, that does not need to be related to their medical condition. So then the issue came, well, how long can they keep accruing annual leave? You know, is that indefinite? And there was another European case, and that said that no, that would be contrary to the working time directive to accrue indefinitely, and that it should be limited to within 18 months of the end of the holiday year in which it is accrued. And then, helpfully, we've had an EAT case called Plum and Duncan Print Group, and that's held that the working time regulations should be read to include permitting the employee to take annual leave up to 18 months after the end of the holiday year.
So 18 months is the time period you're looking at?
That's correct.
After which it will expire?
That's right. Well, that's a position at the moment.
Unless it changes.
Indeed.
And a situation that causes a lot of frustration for employers is where they have notified an employee they're going to take disciplinary action against them and they go off on long-term sickness absence. What can an employer do in those circumstances?
Well, they need to proceed carefully. At the beginning, they really need to sort of balance the importance of dealing with a disciplinary matter in a timely way, but also the employee's medical condition. So the first thing they should do is try to ascertain whether or not the employee is actually well enough to attend. So they should obtain medical evidence, and that evidence would be geared specifically to asking if the employee is able to attend and if there are any reasonable adjustments.
So you talked there about reasonable adjustments. What sorts of reasonable adjustments are you thinking about for a disabled employee?
Well, an employee's ability to attend could be assisted, say, if they're allowed frequent breaks during the disciplinary hearing, or if the hearing took place possibly not at the employee's home, but in a neutral location very close to the employee's home, or if they could be accompanied, say, by a family member or a family friend, so extending the statutory right to be accompanied.
And possibly extend the time that you take the disciplinary action over.
Absolutely.
And what if the employee sends in a medical report from their doctor or consultant saying that they're actually not well enough to attend a disciplinary hearing? What should an employer do in that situation?
Well, I think if possible, the employer should put the process on hold, because an employee's attendance at a disciplinary hearing, well, it's the bedrock and it goes to the real issue of fairness. And it's likely that an employer always has to show they've conducted a reasonable investigation. And if the employee wasn't given an opportunity to state their case, there could be problems. And also, case law really has established that it will be the exception rather than the rule when a hearing would proceed without the employee attending, because there are risks of disability discrimination, unfair dismissal.
Where can employers find guidance on this?
Well, the Expert HR site has got many resources on this point and goes into quite a bit of detail with practical guidance. And with this podcast, we have linked to some of these very helpful resources.
And another situation which has long vexed employers is whether or not the employer can dismiss an employee before their contractual sick pay has been exhausted. Often you see an employee can have quite generous contractual sick pay, maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years in some cases, or perhaps even longer. Can the employer dismiss before they've exhausted their contractual sick pay?
An employer, again, must approach this issue very carefully, because they could be at risk. Well, firstly, I mentioned wrongful dismissal and breach of contract, because if, say, the employee's contract allows for them to receive sickness pay for 12 months and they're dismissed after 8 months, then they'll say, well, your dismissal, you've breached my contract because I'm not able to enjoy the further 4 months of sickness pay. Now, whether or not the employee will succeed will always depend on the wording of the contract, but it is a risk and it's something that must be borne in mind by employers.
And what about unfair dismissal then?
The test for unfair dismissal is different. Now, a dismissal on the grounds of ill health is a dismissal for capability, and that's a potentially fair reason. Now, employers will always, in assessing the other elements, have to assess whether or not there was a fair procedure and whether that reason was reasonable in all the circumstances. And one of the questions they will always ask is whether the employer should have taken longer before reaching that decision, and the issue of sick pay is a factor there. So it may not be determinative, but it's just one of the factors to be taken together in all the mix with all the other circumstances.
So that's one of the circumstances to be taken into consideration when looking at unfair dismissal.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Fiona, for that very helpful guidance and tips for employers on managing sickness absence and some very difficult issues, including how to go about maintaining reasonable contact with an employee on long-term sickness absence and how to deal with holiday accrued during sickness absence. There are more resources on our website, including two how-tos: how to deal with employees on long-term sickness absence and how to handle a situation where an employee goes off sick during the disciplinary process. There's also a very helpful long-term sickness absence policy in our policies and documents section. That brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR Weekly, which you've been listening to with me, Susan Dennehy. We're back again next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.
Expert HR Weekly, the latest from experthr.co.uk, the award-winning subscription service for HR professionals.